Chapter 16 Coronet, Corellia.
On the data pad, it's CCC-39, Doran shouted forward from the passenger compartment.
In the co-pilot seat, Zek twisted uncomfortably and shouted back,
I'm telling you, the signs read Wedge Antilles Boulevard.
Be quiet, Jaina snapped from the pilot seat. It's got to be the same route. Cities rename their streets all the time.
Their vehicle, a standard Lambda-class shuttle, its wings locked in the down position for flight, cruised down the center of the Coronet Boulevard. Its presence was incongruous. Though no more massive than some cargo-carrying groundspeeders moving along the same avenue, it protruded in ways no groundspeeder did, its flight wings sticking out of the lane on both sides, its upper stabilizer rising well above the containment zone indicated for the traffic lane. Nor was it inconspicuous in any other way. Colored the bright tan of desert sands, with a Corellian sand panther twisting and lashing out, painted along each side, it was even more highly decorated than most Corellian personal vehicles. Zek twisted to face forward again.
This seat is too small for me.
It's too small for anyone, Jaina said. I think it's built for a child.
And it smells like fur.
Jaina glanced over.
Yes, there's fur coming off it and sticking to your clothes. Maybe a boffin?
Zek leaned back to sniff at the seat top.
Doesn't smell like a boffin.
We don't all smell alike.
Collier's outraged shout floated up from the passenger compartment.
How do these rumors get started?
Rest your mouth, you're injured, Jaina called back.
A groundspeeder rose from a lower lane and settled into place in front of the shuttle's bow, close enough that its proximity alarm sounded, precisely what the irritated Corellian pilot ahead intended. Jaina growled. All around, normal groundspeeder traffic was reacting negatively to the inappropriate presence of the shuttle in their traffic lane. They crowded the shuttle from behind, decelerated ahead to force Jaina to slow down, settled into place immediately above the shuttle's wings to aggravate her.
Rudest pilots in the universe, she said. Where's Uncle Luke?
Soon. Soon, Thon soothed from the main compartment.
A new sound cut through the shuttle's hull, the warbling alarm of a Corsec groundspeeder. Sighing, Jaina checked her sensor board and found the view showing the vehicle. It was right behind the shuttle, its flashers going, its pilot waving her to descend. Doubtless, the pilot was also broadcasting a warning, but the shuttle's communications gear was set to hardpoint squadron and operation frequencies.
Are we on Corellia yet? Zek asked.
First chance I'm going to space you, Jaina said.
They reached a point where Wedge Antilles Boulevard crossed under an even broader avenue, listed as Five Brothers Avenue on both the datapad and the ground-level glow signs. Traffic on Five Brothers Avenue was higher than that on Wedge Antilles Boulevard, for the simple reason that this was an elevated trafficway, a thruster-scoured transparasteel bridge so broad that even the fastest-moving vehicles on Wedge Antilles Boulevard would be beneath it, in shadow, for long, long seconds. But as Jaina's stolen shuttle neared the intersection, she and Zek recognized some of the traffic up on the Five Brothers overpass, a formation of X-wings, tucked neatly among the groundspeeders, and also pursued by a Corsec speeder, doubtless piloted by a very annoyed officer. She keyed her communications board.
Hardpoint, this is Perella Tauntaun. We have you on visuals. Over.
Luke Skywalker's voice crackled back instantly.
Are you spaceworthy?
Wait, I see you.
Isn't that a little conspicuous? Sand panthers?
Over.
Best we could do on short notice, and we're ready for space. Over.
Begin your ascent. Out.
Belt in or hang on, Jaina shouted.
The jubilant tone in her voice came from being able, finally, to escape the restrictions of slow-paced traffic and a ruined operation. Not waiting to see if her teammates complied,
They'd been told to belt in the instant they originally took off, after all. She used her repulsors to raise the shuttle's nose. The pursuing Corsac vehicle crowded up on her rear a little too fast from a little too close. Jaina heard a clang of impact as the ground speeder banged into her main drive unit. She fired her accelerators, just enough to splash thruster wash over the hood of the Corsac vehicle, and gave the pilot 2 seconds to get clear. Then she put her thrusters and repulsor lift units on full. The shuttle leapt into the sky. It didn't leap as nimbly as the X-wings on the bridge ahead. They stood on their tails and rocketed skyward. By comparison, her shuttle rose like a lazy balloon. But it was better than being in traffic. 4 of the X-wings reduced speed and dropped into position behind her, forming a protective box beyond her stern. 3 maneuvered into position around her, 1 above, 1 to port, 1 to starboard, a protective triangle. And Luke and Mara took point. Jaina grinned. She'd prefer to be out there with them, in a nimble starfighter protecting a more vulnerable target, but if she had to be shepherded, to have Luke and Mara doing the honors was about as good as it could get. Corelli in space. The ships of Admiral Klauskin's task force pulled away from Corellia's gravitational attraction. It would be some time, long minutes, before they were far enough away from the gravity well to make the jump to hyperspace. The vessels of the Corellian fleet moved in, forming up in small groups of 4 and 5 ships.
"But they're not moving in for the kill," Fiav Fenn said. "They've recalled their fighter squadrons."
"We're just going to get harassment fire, then," Klauskin said.
"Probably."
"How's their frigate?"
"Floating dead in space. Minimal casualties, as far as we can determine, but a confirmed kill. All their escape pods have been picked up by their side."
"Good, good." Klauskin nodded absently. The forward elements of Klauskin's task force, including Dodonna, reached the leading edge of the reconfiguring Corellian fleet. Dodonna began shivering as she sustained long-distance laser battery fire. But, as Klauskin had predicted, nothing heavier hit her. Nothing threatened to batter down her shields. Harassment fire. The Admiral grinned.
"In about half an hour, they'll wish they tried to blow us out of the sky."
"Yes, sir."
Fenn's voice sounded dull. Klauskin wondered what had happened to diminish her enthusiasm for her job. As they passed through the harassment screen, Dodonna shook and vibrated, but Klauskin never felt genuinely threatened. Reports continued to flood into the bridge. GA ship after ship reached the point where they could enter hyperspace. Preliminary starfighter losses from the skirmish were assessed. The role of the accidental intruder Millennium Falcon in the action was evaluated. Hardpoint Squadron reported a successful departure from Corellian atmosphere. The last lagging vessel in Klauskin's task force reported readiness to enter hyperspace.
"All ships jump," Klauskin ordered. A moment later, the stars through the forward viewport seemed to twist and spin,
an unsettling kaleidoscopic visual image. An instant later, they straightened themselves, and the white-clouded blue and green planet Trollis wrenched into view in the distance ahead.
"All starfighter squadrons," Klauskin said, "launch."
2 hours later, it was done. A world was occupied and subjugated. To be sure, this wasn't a tremendous military accomplishment. Trollis was lightly occupied, and its defense against invasion amounted to a few scattered Corsac units, plus a dangerous, well-armed commando unit holding the installation built around the repulsor unit associated with Centerpoint Station. Klauskin's forces didn't bother with the repulsor defenders. They merely swept down on the city of Relidir, whose population of 1 million made it a metropolis by the standards of Trollis, and took the city and planetary leaders into custody. Units of Klauskin's task force landed in the city and occupied several downtown blocks. A few assault shuttles, full of elite soldiers, surrounded the repulsor facility with orders to keep its garrison bottled up. The rest of the task force's ships remained in orbit, a defensive perimeter. Units of the Corellian fleet began popping into nearby space, circling, reconnoitering, attempting to look threatening. It was evident to Klauskin that their commanders were confused, ill-directed. He smiled. He'd achieved his purpose by securing this beachhead. He'd confused the enemy. They were, at last, intimidated.
"Enemy reinforcements continue to arrive," he said, his tones ringing and military. "But take no action, for fear of retaliation against or spillover damage to the civilian population."
He thought for a moment, attempting to dredge up some further statement of hope and good cheer, then shook his head.
"Operation Roundabout. Admiral Matrick Klauskin commanding."
He nodded to Fenn to indicate she should cease recording. She hit the appropriate button on her datapad.
"Shall I clean it up before sending, sir?"
"No, send it raw. Let's not make Admiral Pelion wait for it any longer than he has to. He's getting on in years, you know."
"Yes, sir."
"I need a brief rest. I'll be in my quarters."
Klauskin turned away from the bow viewports that had occupied his attention for the last several hours and began the long walk to his quarters. Minutes later, the door into his quarters slid open, and he strode through. Only then did his pace change, his step fading from energetic to slow and weary. And weary he was, tired both physically and emotionally. To have his mission run head-on into certain failure, to have him wrest it back to a result that he could consider a success, had taken a toll on him. An admiral's flagship quarters were large and could be dressed up in opulence, but Klauskin had never taken that route. His largest chamber, instead of being a living chamber full of entertainments and comforts, had been furnished as a conference room, one large oval table and numerous padded chairs, with viewports affording it a beautiful port-side view of the stars. He walked past the table, seeing neither it nor the glorious view, and entered his bedchamber. He sat on the bed, remained upright long enough to pull his boots off, and lay back. The air above him shimmered, and Adela appeared. She was a trifle overweight, but dressed well to compensate for it, today wearing a green formal gown with a low neckline. Her long hair, brown, streaked with gray, was piled high in a Coruscanti style that some considered out of date, but Klauskin had always regarded as classic. She wore no jewelry. She despised jewelry. In all the years they'd been married, she'd never looked more radiant. At the moment, she looked far happier and healthier than the month before she died. He'd long since stopped wondering how he'd been so lucky to have her re-enter his life. Now he just smiled up at her.
"I'm glad you came."
"Shh." She put a finger to her lips, then lowered it to his.
"You need to rest. You did so very well today."
"I did, didn't I?"
"Yes. Don't ever let anyone ever tell you that you didn't."
Her tone was almost stern.
"You just wait. Soon enough they'll all be saying how you took impossible orders and sliced a victory out of them. You'll be famous. You'll be promoted to Fleet Admiral."
"Yes, dear."
"No other reward would be acceptable. Anything else would be an insult."
"Yes, dear."
"Sleep, Matrick."
He did. Coruscant. 2 days later, Luke Skywalker, dressed in the full robe array of a Jedi Master,
was escorted to a conference chamber within the densest government precincts on Coruscant. Several invitees to the meeting were already there and seated. At the head of the table was Chief of State Cal Omis, a lean, fair man with thinning hair. The stresses of his office and late middle age had made the man gaunt, even frail-looking, but determination kept him upright and lent him dignity. He wore garments cut in the fashion of a formal GA military uniform, but in non-regulation deep purple. To his right sat Admiral Gilad Pelion, acting chief of the GA military. He had been a successful, ferocious Space Navy officer in the days of the Old Republic, and even now, more than 60 years later, still commanded with wit, ingenuity, and uncompromising will. He and Luke exchanged glances, and the faintest of ironic smiles. More than 30 years earlier, the two had been enemies, Luke fighting for the New Republic, and Pelion for the remnants of the Empire, and now they served the same cause. Despite his advancing age, Pelion still appeared formidable, thick-chested, his white hair still bushy, his mustache still ferocious. His GA Admiral's uniform was as crisp as his manner. To his right sat Admiral Neothel, a female Mon Calamari. Unlike Akbar, perhaps the best-known military Mon Cal officer in recent history, she was known for an icy disposition and cutting reprimands. Her outsized eyes followed Luke as he entered the chamber. He spared her a glance and a slight friendly nod. He did not know her well, and had neither affection nor disdain for her. Elsewhere at the table sat advisers and aides for the three. The composition of meeting attendees told Luke that all the discussion would be about military affairs and their effects on political matters, and that meant the mess at Corellia. Chief Omis gestured to the unoccupied seat to his left, and Luke took it.
"Good to see you, Master Skywalker. Thank you for arriving so quickly."
"Happy to oblige, sir." Luke's arrival had indeed been quick. The transport carrying him, his Jedi teams, and others, fresh from Operation Roundabout, had landed less than an hour before.
"So," Omis glanced at Pelion, "Admiral, would you care to begin?"
"Yes."
Pelion glanced at the datapad before him.
"Master Skywalker, how would you describe the Jedi operations that were part of Roundabout?"
"Successful," Luke said, "but not cleanly so. We had 5 operations. Slash Rat, Perella, Tauntaun, Womp Rat, and Minock." Pelion managed a small smile.
"Each creature being either bad-tempered or bad-smelling."
"Yes, sir. Slash Rat, commanded by Master Corrin Horn, was a 2-operative team observing Coronet's main starport for significant starfighter launch activities. Since most of Coronet's starfighter squadrons had apparently been pulled for Corellia's fleet action, of course, Slash Rat's usefulness was largely nullified. Perella and Tauntaun, respectively commanded by Jaina Solo and Tahiri Vela, were assigned the task of kidnapping Prime Minister Idle Saxon and Chief of State Thrakken Sal Solo from their residences. One of the aides toward the foot of the table, a male Bothan, cleared his throat. His fur rippled with what Luke interpreted as discomfort.
"It's probably inappropriate," he said, "to use the word kidnapping."
Neothel's eyes twitched, and her gaze pinned the speaker.
"Master Skywalker isn't speaking to the public or the press," she said, her voice harsh and gravelly. "So he isn't obliged to mince words. In this company, we should be using precise terminology, not your public relations pablum. Shouldn't we?"
The Bothan's fur rippled again, and Luke could sense it was from a combination of fear and anger at being rebuked.
"Yes, Admiral," the man said.
"In the future," Neothel added, "try confining your remarks to useful ones.
Yes, Admiral.
Luke suppressed a smile. He turned back to Pelion. Their mission was an almost complete failure, due to what appears to be foreknowledge on Corellia's part. Saxon and Sal Solo remain on Corellia. Womprat, which I commanded, had the task of retrieving Tauntaun and Perella, and was successful, though not without loss. We lost a shuttle and its two-person crew, and an X-Wing with its Jedi pilot. Finally, Luke said, there's Minock. The most important of the operations, and the one for which the other operations, as significant as they might have been, were also to act as a diversion. Minock was, from both a short-term and long-term perspective, spectacularly successful. Centerpoint Station was removed as a threat through the elimination of the control mechanisms the Corellians had designed to make it completely operational. But the station itself wasn't destroyed, meaning that in the long run it can be further examined and investigated. There was some loss of life among Corellian Security Force members defending the installation, but neither of the Jedi involved in the mission was hurt. And this all despite the fact that the Corellians in charge of the station were fully aware that operatives were coming. That Jedi operatives were coming. Pelion fixed Luke with a stare that could most charitably be described as unhappy.
You're certain they knew Jedi would be coming?
Luke nodded. Yes, sir. According to Minock's reports, they had developed tactics and brought in combat droids that were clearly optimized for action against Jedi. They used wide-effect weapons such as sonic attacks and explosives, very hard for Jedi to evade. They had fast-moving, very mobile units capable of sustaining action against powerful individual infiltrators. Their holocam sensor network appeared to be set up to track individuals moving through the station. They even had a trap specifically designed to keep Jedi from using the Force. Also, a resource remaining in Corellia, Luke didn't name Dr. Saya, since all those here who were authorized to know that name would already be familiar with it, reports discussions among the Corsac troops about the relative effectiveness of their brief anti-Jedi training.
Ah.
Pelion looked not at all surprised by the allegation that the Corellians had had not just advance warning of the operation, but of specific details about the operation's composition.
I understand your own son was responsible for Minock being a success.
That's correct, sir.
Your 13-year-old son.
Luke smiled. Yes, sir.
You're more ruthless than I realized, Master Skywalker.
Luke shook his head. I simply don't swim against the currents of the Force. Neothel asked,
could General Wedge Antilles have been the conduit for all the advanced knowledge the Corellians received?
Luke frowned, puzzled. I don't think so. Wedge is retired. I doubt he was involved at all, on either side.
Oh, he was involved, Neothel said, as an extension of the same governing principle that led to Operations Tauntaun and Perella. He was picked up and transported here prior to Operation Roundabout's commencement, to keep him out of trouble.
Luke covered his eyes with his hand.
He escaped a short time later, and apparently returned to Corellia,
Neothel continued.
It's just been announced that Chief Sal Solo has ousted the old Minister of War to assume the position himself, and Antilles has been assigned liaison between Sal Solo and Prime Minister Saxon.
I'm surprised, Luke said. He looked up at the Mon Cal officer again. Surprised that he'd take a position like that.
I'm not, Pelion said. If I'd been subjected to that sort of treatment, I might declare a personal war on the government that had authorized it. I suspect Antilles isn't fighting for Corellia. He's against us. Us personally.
He indicated himself and Cal Omis, then turned to Neothel.
Find out the name of every officer who botched any portion of the operation against Antilles. Perhaps he'll remove himself from the picture if we bust every one of them down to floor sweeper.
Admiral, it will be a pleasure.
Neothel turned to Luke.
I need you to be logical instead of sentimental when answering this. Could your sister have been the leak, informing the Corellians about the Jedi involvement?
Luke shook his head. Impossible. Neothel made a wet, rubbery noise, the Mon Calamari equivalent of a snort of derision.
Nothing's impossible, Skywalker.
I'll explain, with logic, why I believe it's impossible. For her to know that Jedi would be part of the operation, she'd also have to be privy to more information than that. And the more information would reveal that her son and her daughter, and my son, were part of the operation. Can you imagine her giving the Corellians information that would oblige them to kill her children and her nephew? Neothel spread her hands, palms up, an I don't know gesture.
It depends on the strength of her convictions, and what those convictions are. You haven't proved that her ideals don't value Corellian independence above family survival.
Enough, Chief Omis said. It's out of the question. But there is a leak somewhere, Luke conceded. In the Order, here in the seat of government? I'm not sure which. We have to find it and close it.
Another question, Pelion said. What impression did you have of Admiral Klauskin?
Luke considered. Mostly favorable. At least as the operation was coming together, he seemed smart and decisive. When things started to go wrong, though, well, it seems obvious that he chose badly. Improvisation does not appear to be one of his skills.
That's putting it mildly, Omis said. But really, that's all you or any of your Jedi could say about him?
Well, no. Luke suppressed a sigh. Reluctance to speak ill of someone was out of place here. Except for me, Jedi dealings with him were very limited. I saw him at several briefings. All the team heads except Corin Horn, Jaina, Tahiri, Jason, and I were at one briefing, and all the Jedi met him at one dinner. It was after that dinner that one of my Jedi, Tew Zax, a recently confirmed Jedi Knight, said that she'd had the oddest impression from him. Neothel asked,
"Which was what?"
That he'd blanked at one point during dinner. That while I was swapping starfighter pilot stories with Jaina, Klauskin had just gone away, mentally. An absence so strong she felt it through the Force. Just for a few moments. Neothel's eyes edged forward, a gesture perhaps meant to intimidate.
And you didn't report this?
Report what? Luke shrugged. The same sort of thing can happen when someone enters a meditative state, or falls into a particularly private memory. Tew's young enough that she hadn't encountered it before. I have, and didn't think anything of it. Do you believe it could be evidence of a more significant problem?
Oh, yes.
Neothel nodded, the motion made exaggerated by the size of her head, longer than that of any human.
He has apparently experienced a complete emotional and mental breakdown. 12 standard hours after the occupation of Trollis, His aide, Colonel Fenn, found him wandering Dodona's corridors in his robe, looking for his wife. His dead wife. He hasn't responded much to questions or orders since. Dodona's officers have been told that he collapsed from exhaustion.
Which brings us to the last subject of significance we need you for, Master Skywalker.
Chief Omis rubbed his chin.
The occupation of Trollis and its consequences. Operation Roundabout was supposed to force the Corellians to realize that they can't just rebuild their giant blaster in space. We were to take the giant blaster away and wrap their heads with our knuckles. We failed to wrap their heads. The arrival of the Corellian fleet prevented that. But we did take their giant blaster away. And had our task force returned to Coruscant from that point, we still would have been ahead, if only slightly ahead, in the game.
But the occupation of Trollis,
Neofel said,
has made them angry. Fighting mad, I believe the expression is.
Corellia continues to arm herself, Pelion said. Other planets are expressing outrage about the way Roundabout was conducted. Commodore, Fondor, Bespin, coalitions within the corporate sector, more every hour. Some of them are simply playing political games, of course, but others could conceivably join Corellia in a military alliance.
I know. Luke's voice was rueful. Maybe those other planets would ease off if we showed them the evidence you've gathered about Corellia's secret assault fleet.
We can't, Omis said. Our evidence isn't incontrovertible, and some of those worlds would ally with Corellia even if it were. We'd be tipping our hand for nothing.
And we still wouldn't know the location of the fleet, Pelion said. But we can still manage this through diplomacy. Prime Minister Saxon has indicated that she would be willing to meet with us in a mission of peace, even travel from Corellia for the meeting. But not here. Not to Coruscant.
Where, then? Luke asked.
Not yet determined, Pelion said. That's not important. It will have to be a system that both sides consider neutral on this issue. Now, Chief of State Omis cannot represent the Galactic Alliance, since his rank is substantially higher than Saxon's. For the leader of hundreds of worlds to travel to meet the leader of five would be too great a sign of weakness.
Of course, Luke said. He breathed deeply, willing away the sudden stab of nausea he felt. This was the type of politics he hated most, niggling details based on perceptions of relative merit or importance.
So it will be me, Pelion continued. Each side will have a security detail in place. But Prime Minister Saxon has made an interesting concession. She's willing to stipulate the neutrality of Jedi on this issue, and to have as many Jedi present as you, Luke Skywalker, wish, to defend the diplomatic mission.
Luke nodded. Give me the details, and I'll assemble a team. But I don't understand why she'd do that. The Jedi Order is specifically an organization defending the Galactic Alliance. We're not entirely impartial. Chief Omis said,
I can only give you a guess. A guess based on decades of political dealings. I think Saxon wants peace. Not even necessarily for its own sake, but because war will allow Chief Sal Solo to assume emergency power and control resources she can't regulate or restrain. But she has to find a way to preserve the peace that allows the Corellians to save face. Which means, so do we.
We could withdraw the units occupying Trollis, Luke said. Chief Omis nodded.
Correct. But we'll let that be one of Saxon's negotiating points. She'll certainly insist on it, and we'll agree to it.
We shouldn't.
That was Neothel, and if anything, there seemed to be even more grumble to her voice than before.
We should massively reinforce it now. Begin a forced relocation of the civilian population. We'll need it as a jumping-off point if the Corellians don't comply and we have to conquer the system. Not having it available to us could cost us immeasurably.
Chief Omis fixed her with an admonishing look.
We'll agree to it,
he continued, and returned his attention to Luke.
It is a political rather than a military tactic. If we just withdraw now, the Corellians become more belligerent, seeing our action as weakness. If we agree to Saxon's negotiations on that point, we don't look weak, and Saxon's position is strengthened.
I see. Pelion said,
Please assemble a list of prospects for your Jedi security team. We'll let you know as things develop.
Luke stood. May the Force be with you, Admiral. Pelion grinned.
Once upon a time, I was certain I'd never hear those words directed toward me.
Luke smiled in return. Times change. He nodded his respects to the others and swept out of the chamber.